Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and April is Foot Health Awareness Month, so a great time to be talking with our podiatrist, Dr. Benjamin Willis. Before we do, I have a few announcements I'd like to share. The month of April is also Occupational Therapy Month, and 21st Century Rehab is celebrating by offering free 30-minute exams to patients. We have two occupational therapists here at Van Deest Medical Center, Diana Raska and Sarah Zorn. So if you're a person who is having issues with range of motion or injuries to possibly your hand, wrist, elbow, arm, or shoulder, maybe you need some neurological rehabilitation, or if you have some chronic swelling, you can schedule a free exam during the month of April by calling the department at 515-832-7735. And I do want to mention Diana and Sarah are both occupational therapists with some special training in addition to that. Diana is LSVT Big certified, so she works with patients that have Parkinson's disease, offers a program for them. Sarah Zorn is also a certified lymphedema therapist. So I mentioned if you're someone that has chronic swelling, has lymphedema, a great resource for you there. Again, this is during the month of April, and you can call to schedule your free exam, 832-7735. Also, this week, we welcome back our new orthopedic services. As I've mentioned on previous programs, we have partnered with Iowa Ortho to bring orthopedic services to our hospital here in Webster City. Dr. Brett Rosenthal is an orthopedic spine specialist, and he is back today seeing patients. Dr. Scott Shumway is a hand and upper extremity specialist, and he will be back on site tomorrow, and he's actually doing surgeries here in our hospital. Dr. Rosenthal will see patients the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. Dr. Shumway is here the second and fourth Thursdays of each month. And you can schedule appointments by calling 515-832-7746. And then just a couple of quick announcements regarding an event we have. This Friday, our auxiliary is offering a uniform scrub and clothing sale. It is from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. in our clinic boardroom. And there is an exterior door that you can enter. It's located between the hospital and the clinic. There's a sidewalk that leads right from the parking lot to the clinic boardroom, so very easy access there. The sale is actually being brought to us by Emerson's at the Willow out of Mason City, and proceeds from this fundraiser support patient care needs at our hospital. And typically in the past, it has been kind of a scrub sale, but Emerson's at the Willow has all sorts of clothing, shoes and jackets and shirts and half zips and just lots of great stuff. So you'll want to come out and check it out again this Friday, April 12th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then lastly, I want to give a quick reminder, just a great opportunity for high school graduates who are looking to pursue a career in healthcare. The Hospital Auxiliary is offering four $1,000 scholarships. And the deadline for the application is next Monday, April 15th. So the application can be found on our website. Go to www.vandeestmc.org. And information has been available in the counselor's offices in all the high schools throughout Hamilton County. And again, the easiest way is to just go on to our website and you can find the application there. Great opportunity, and we don't want anyone to miss out on that. And with that, we're ready to start into our program. As I mentioned, we have as our guest, podiatrist Dr. Benjamin Willis with us today. Good morning, Dr. Willis.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing well. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. It's a great time to be talking about our feet. April is Foot Health Awareness Month, and our feet are one of the most frequently ignored parts of our anatomy. So we want people to take care of their feet, keep them happy and healthy, and we're going to offer some information of how they can do that.
You bet.
So why don't you start by just sharing a little bit about yourself for those who don't know you, how long you've been a podiatrist, and how long you've been with us at Van Deese Medical Center.
Oh, sure. You bet. So a little bit about myself. I grew up in Idaho originally, but I've been in Iowa now since 2015. It's going too quick. But I've been here as a podiatrist for over 5 years, going on 6 years. And started originally in Ames and then found this great opportunity up here. So been here and yeah, I love Van Deese.
And it is wonderful to have you here. Dr. Willis is in our family health clinic here in Webster City full time. And that is terrific that that is available for patients.
You bet. Yeah, Tuesday through Friday.
Wonderful. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of the conditions that affect the foot and ankle. And of course, we probably can't cover them all in today's program, but maybe some of the more common ones that you do treat.
Sure. Yeah, the list really is vast. And you can break down the conditions that affect the foot and the ankle into several categories, whether it's arthritic conditions that can affect the joints of the foot and the ankle. There's diabetes and cardiovascular disease. There's actually manifestations of those conditions in the foot and the ankle. Skin is a big one. I mean, we see a lot of skin lesions, whether it be like a plantar wart that a lot of people experience growing up, and even later in life you can have those. It's pretty rare, but you can have skin cancer in the foot, the ankle. Actually, the nail itself there's certain signs to look for cancerous conditions there. Very frequent, we see people for toenail issues, whether it's ingrown toenails, especially, now that we're in the spring season. It seems like whenever we have a transition from one type of shoe, like an enclosed winter boot to like summer shoes, it seems like we have an onslaught of, quite a few ingrown toenails and sometimes toe injuries, but yeah, really, the list is exhaustive. Really, if there's any foot or ankle pain out there, we more than happy to take a look and diagnose that. We got tricks for all sorts of conditions, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yes, you do. For general foot health, really for everyone, do you have some recommendations that you would share?
Sure. Yeah, it sounds maybe oversimplified, but I mean, just the simple act of, daily hygiene for the foot and ankle can help avoid certain conditions. And that does play a role for, we were just talking about ingrown toenails, right? If mm-hmm. you're washing your feet between the toes, taking good care of yourself in that way, that'll help, avoid certain issues. Moisturization as well. I mean, I think during the winter months, that can be even more of an issue because it's so dry. If you have calluses to your feet, they tend to crack and bleed. And so, like I said, it sounds really simple, but just cleaning your feet frequently, moisturizing, and then, depending on the condition, we get into good supportive shoes, things that we can do for certain conditions. If it's an overuse injury, things that we can do to offload and help those structures that might be screaming at you currently.
Right. And we're going to dive into some of those more common issues. But it's a perfect time, really, to be talking about foot health because, as you've mentioned, We're coming out of winter, and it's kind of that time where people probably do pay more attention to their feet. I mean,
sure.
Just with the change of season, different shoe wear,
yeah.
It's kind of like this uncovering of, oh gosh, what's going on with my foot here? Maybe sure. I need to take a look at this.
Haven't seen them since last winter, so yeah, right. That's a good point.
Right. So some of the more common foot problems that you treat, let's start with bunions.
Yeah. Okay. What would you like to know about bunions?
Well, what are bunions and maybe the causes, and then let's kind of move into symptoms and treatment.
Okay.
Yeah.
You bet. So a bunion, I mean, most people have seen a bunion. You mm-hmm. kind of know what it looks like. The I believe it's the Latin word for bunion is turnip. And so it kind of paints a mental picture because if you've seen somebody with bunions, there's this turnip-like bump on the inside of the foot, right? And that's something that can be addressed. We always try to address things conservatively. But causes of bunions can be anything from shoes to genetics, right? So grandma and grandpa, if they've had bunions, and now you're dealing with one. Certainly genetics plays a role with all of our health concerns. But bunions can be made worse with shoes. So if you're wearing shoes that come to a point, shoes that don't fit very well, it can kind of throw off the biomechanics of your foot and make worse a bunion condition. As far as treatment options for bunions, I mean, like mm-hmm. I said, the first thing that we do is we try to get you into a good pair of shoes that is sufficiently wide for you. That's probably number one. Length and width. A lot of us, you know, we figure out what our adult shoe size is, and then we don't think about that a whole lot through our adult years.
Right, like don't deviate.
Yeah. Our foot size and shape can change with time. And so it's important to check your feet. If you can, find one of those, like a good shoe store that has the Brannock device, that metal device that you stand into, and measure heel to toe, like your longest toe. Sometimes it's not your big toe. It could be your from heel to second toe, or I shouldn't say or, and the width of your foot. So you should check from, you know, the widest part of your foot to make sure that you're wearing the right size and width of shoes. So.
And that is really a good tip because, you know, a lot of people do so much purchasing online anymore. So,
yeah.
Like, and as we, you know, go through life, our foot does change. And
right.
It could be that people are needing a different size and they haven't had their foot measured in so long.
Right.
So that's really a good idea.
Yeah. And it's tough because you can't try on online shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely say, if you get a new pair of shoes, it should be pretty comfortable from the get-go. If you feel like you're breaking in shoes, it's probably not the right shoe for you. So that would be a good time. If you happen to get that shoe online, get that one back. Maybe double-check your shoe size. It can be a little tough, though. Certain manufacturers have different shoe sizes, like an 11 in, you know, a certain brand might be different from an 11 in another brand. So got to kind of keep that in mind.
Right.
So. Brands, is that something that we can discuss?
We certainly can.
Okay. Yeah.
People will want to know brands.
Sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And usually, I mean, we'll probably get to this at some point in the program, but shoes, it's not really the brand that I recommend. It's the type of shoe. And yeah, we can talk about that for sure. So
perfect.
Going back to bunions.
Bunions, yes.
Yeah. So aside from conservative care, there's not a ton that you can do. I mean, in theory, we can get you to physical therapy. But once those structures are out of place, I mean, I tell my patients, if it feels okay, if you're not dealing with a lot of pain, we can get you by with good shoes and good inserts. That's fine. If you're having pain, if it's affecting the things that you want to do day to day, it might be time to, after we've exhausted the conservative options, it might be time to talk surgery. So there are a lot of procedures that you can do for a bunion. Not all of them are created equal, in my mm-hmm. opinion. There's some procedures better for a bunion than others, but if it comes down to surgery, there's a good way to basically correct the faulty mechanics and get that foot more narrow, get that bunion corrected, and hopefully get you back into regular shoes pretty quick.
Very good. And typically, if somebody is having to do surgery, again, you know, you kind of exhaust all those conservative approaches first.
Right.
Usually one surgery, will that correct the problem?
In most cases, if you pick mm-hmm. the right surgery.
Right.
I'd say, yeah, there are certain procedures that have a high incidence of bunion recurrence. And so if you do that, there's even a bunion surgery where you basically shave down that bony prominence and that's it. It doesn't correct the mechanics that are involved. So again, before we get to that point, we look at x-rays, we assess the patient mechanically, and if it goes to surgery, we try to make sure that it's a one-and-done procedure. And I don't know that we've had many of those come back, which is nice. Proof's in the pudding, right?
Very good. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Let's now talk about hammer toes.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of the same situation. Actually, hammer toes can come about from poorly fitting shoes, genetics, even bunions, right? So an unaddressed bunion, typically the big toe kind of careens off to the, you know, towards the little toe side. And in doing so, if that deformity is great enough, it'll uproot some of those toes. It kind of screws up the mechanics of the toes themselves and can create hammer toes. Hammer toes, typically when they start, are flexible in most cases. And that's something that we can assess in the office. If I can manually take that toe and kind of flatten it out, it's still considered a semi-flexible or a semi-rigid hammer toe. Once it's stiff, we consider that rigid, and it can be a little tougher to deal with. But just like the bunions, there are conservative things that you can do. We like, not to belabor the point, but shoes that are sufficiently, you know, they fit you correctly and they're sufficiently deep will do a lot to decrease the pain of a hammer toe. There's actually three different types of a hammer toe. It kind of depends on where the curvature is of that toe. We've got several bones in each one of our toes, and if it curls at both knuckles, it's considered a claw toe. Really, the type of hammer toe is not as important as, you know, how we can get you relief, but all the things that we assess before rendering treatment. So conservative care, like I said, shoes, physical therapy, there's certain little exercises that we can do for the toes, but if your hammer toes are painful and nothing that we do conservatively can do the trick, then we start talking surgical things as well.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. How about fungal toenails?
I tell my patients, if you live long enough, you'll probably have fungal toenails at some point. Most people have some involvement there. Fungus is everywhere. It's in the soil. It's in the air. It's at probably at some point in our shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you've had athlete's foot in the past, it can seed, you know, that fungus into the toenail and cause fungal toenails. And also, as we get older, the temperature can change to our foot, right? Circulation is not as good as it once was to our feet. And I believe part of the issue with fungal toenails is that, you know, temperature change. It may give those fungal organisms kind of an ideal opportunity to sneak in and underneath the nail. So treatment options for fungal toenails. There's a slew of topical medication. And in my experience, not many of those work. And if they work, it's after usually like a year of application of antifungal medication or soaks. I've had people soak in vinegar every night for a year. The topicals are usually about 10% successful in spite of all the labor and in some cases expense. There can be pretty expensive topical medications.
And are those typically over-the-counter when you're mentioning that?
There are prescription grade.
Okay.
There are, but like I said, in my experience, if it's worth a try if you don't want to take oral medication or if you don't want to, you know, try the year course of you know, over-the-counter topicals. But in my experience, there's prescription grade medication that you take by mouth once a day. And that's typically about 60% successful. And I say that with a little caveat. I mean, if the entire length of that nail is involved, it's a little harder to treat, right? So if you look at your fungal, if you look at nails right now that are fungal and half of that's involved, you're going to probably have a better outcome treating that fungal toenail with oral medication than if it was the entire nail. It's just harder to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
So
do people, is it just common? Do people just kind of let that go? I mean, if they have... They have one and they just...
You can. I mean, I've seen some very thick, you know, irregularly shaped and discolored nails that don't bother the patient at all, and you can let that go. I would say for certain patients that have a higher risk for potential infection, diabetic issues, a fungal nail that grows, you know, thicker and is rubbing in shoes can cause ingrown toenails. It could cause blood underneath that nail. It could cause basically an opportunity for infection to get in there. So... There are times when the nail may not be bothering the patient, but it might be a good idea to address it. That's certainly a conversation we'd have.
Yeah, and that's definitely what, you know, I love that you share that with patients because, and with listeners here, because I think that is very easy for people to just, well, it doesn't seem, I mean, I know it looks bad, but it doesn't bother me.
Sure.
But it can potentially lead to something more serious.
You bet. And mentally, sometimes it's concerning to people to have, like, you know, to know that there's a fungal infection in my nail. It can be concerning. Unless your immune system is so compromised, the chance of getting ill from fungus in the bloodstream is extremely low. I mean, most of us can fight that off. It's more of a topical, you know, a superficial or a surface infection.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very good to know. And, you know, you just touched on it, so it's just great that we cover this too, but diabetes and how diabetes can affect the feet. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Yeah, diabetes, I would say it affects a lot with the feet as it pertains to circulation, right? A lot of people that have diabetes also deal with neuropathy. So that loss of sensation, that's the medical word for loss of sensation, right? So if you lose sensation to your toes, you no longer have that protective touch. Most of us don't like pain, right, to the feet and the ankles. Nobody likes pain. But if you lose that painful stimulus, your ability to feel pain, you're at a much higher risk to have bad things happen. Like I said, there are people that are so numb to the feet that they can't feel when they're rubbing the skin raw and forming an ulcer to their feet. So... Diabetes, I mean, it can affect all cultures, you know, it can affect young and old alike. But if you've been diagnosed with diabetes, I think it's important to be checked typically every 6 months, like once or twice a year with your podiatrist at least. And if you're high risk, if you've had ulcers in the past, if you've had amputation perhaps of a part of your foot, you're at a much higher risk category. And we get those folks back more frequently just to make sure they're doing okay. And also day-to-day things, if you happen to be diabetic and you're not in the habit of checking your feet daily, that's something that should happen. So there's a lot to be said for prevention versus trying to fix it once it's broken. So
right.
If you can catch a problem before it's blown up. I've seen people that walk in weeks after they've stepped on a staple or stepped on something that they weren't aware was on the underside of their foot because they've lost that pain response. If you lose that pain response, you may not realize it's an issue until it's pretty serious, and you might be looking at, like I said, amputation or long-term IV antibiotics or something along those lines.
Are there things that people can do once they do have neuropathy to improve that?
That's tough. I know there's a lot. I think there's a lot of ads these days. I get asked a lot about that.
Yes.
So in my experience, so there's a lot of things that can cause neuropathy. That I think that the main thing is that you find out what's causing the neuropathy first. If it's diabetes and you've lost that sensation for more than about 6 months, and in my experience, you don't typically get that sensation back. If you happen to have neuropathy because you're deficient in some of the chemicals that we need to keep good, healthy nerves, and you can identify that and supplement, in some cases you can get sensation back. But like I said, in the case of diabetes, where it's the blood sugar that's kind of poisoned off the nerves over a prolonged period of time, very important to continue with blood sugar control, but like I said, the sensation very frequently is gone. So
you mentioned if somebody was like deficient in like say some nutrients, how would they find out? Is it through blood work that they would find out if they would be deficient?
Yeah, blood work. Oftentimes I'll send people to a neurologist too and kind of double check the nerves. Frequently we'll check it at a level higher than the foot and the ankle, right? So the neurologist may check up at the thigh level or even the low back and just make sure that we don't have an impinged nerve. And that's another good point. If you have neuropathy because the nerves are pinched in the back because of arthritis or some other condition, I mean, that would be good to know and see if we could remedy that first. That would be outside of my wheelhouse a little bit, of course. But yeah, determination of what's causing that neuropathy is key.
Gosh, for sure. And like you mentioned, you recommend checking your feet daily. So that's as simple as, you know, looking in the mirror at, say, the bottom of your feet. You know, if you don't ever look at the bottom of your feet and make sure you don't have, you know, a wound or something, that, especially if you don't have the feeling down there.
Right. Yeah. And if you have vision issues, sometimes I'll ask patients to maybe ask a loving family member to take a look at the underside of their feet. Or if you're not flexible enough to rotate over and look at the underside of your foot, but you can, you know, feel with your hand underneath the underside of your foot, that's a good option as well. Just to make sure that, like I said, if you happen to step on a shard of glass from that glass that you broke in your kitchen months ago, you want to catch that as soon as possible and address it.
Mm-hmm. So. And you also do treat, you provide some wound care treatment too.
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see quite a few wounds of all different sources. So whether that's a vascular wound, a wound from diabetes and the neuropathy that we were talking about, traumatic wounds. Yeah, we see those and address those in the clinic. So we do a fair amount of wound care, you bet.
Great. Yeah. So we mentioned this earlier, and I did want to circle back to it. Just general shoes.
Yeah.
What are people to be looking for?
Sure. So if you have a normal, you know, air quotes, normal foot, and we all vary a little bit, but if there's no major issues, no major deformity, and frankly, you know, a pronounced enough bunion counts as a deformity, right? So if for the most part your foot's normal, I'd say look for a good stability shoe, especially this time of year. Stability shoe is like an athletic shoe. It's not a brand of shoe, it's more of a family. So If you go into a good shoe store, I think closest to us here in Webster City would be like Brown Shoe Fit in Fort Dodge. Mm-hmm. There's also Brown's down in Ames, Jack's and Emmerhoff's down in Ames as well. All good places to go. They could also measure your feet like we discussed earlier.
Right.
If you go in there and you ask for stability shoes, they typically will point to a wall that has all the different brands. If it's on the stability shoe wall, it typically is... it's got the characteristics that we're looking for. It doesn't twist a whole lot. You can't fold that shoe in half. It kind of gives you a good stable platform that then if you do have certain foot conditions, again, going back to bunions and those things, you can build up inserts that kind of address the mechanical issues that might be causing you pain. But yeah, stability shoes, a great place to start. That is an enclosed shoe though, and we're getting to warmer months. And so, you know, there's going to be people that want, you know, more of an open-toed shoe or a sandal. As you might imagine, all sandals are not created equal, right?
Correct.
So try to avoid your $5 flip-flops if you can. Some people are diehard flip-flop wearers, but if you can invest a little extra money into good shoe gear for the summer, the warmer months, like a good Birkenstock. Birkenstocks were popular when I was in high school. They were popular again here not too long ago. Teva brand sandals are good. Even Chaco, mm-hmm. you know, Chaco, that a decent brand for support. It kind of like a shoe. It doesn't bend, it doesn't twist, and gives you, in some cases, it's even got built-in like arch support.
So. And that's what I notice in some of those brands. They do. Yeah. There is a very nice arch support in some of those.
Right. And Birkenstocks are nice because over time you settle into the cork, it actually conforms to you over time. So that's my choice typically for sandals around the house.
Great recommendations. Thank you, Dr. Willis. And like we said, we're into spring. It won't be long. It'll be summertime. Each season presents unique challenges to foot health. What other recommendations do you have going into the spring and summer months?
Really just, I think all the things that we've touched on, really. I mean, work on, daily hygiene. That I think most of us do that pretty well. Try to make sure that, you know, if you find that your foot's fatiguing quickly, especially as you're outside, you're more active these months, look to make sure that the shoes are, you know, good and supportive. And if you're still fatiguing, I mean, you may have a foot type, people that have high arches or low arches, you know, both ends of those spectrums, the muscles in your feet can fatigue. There's good over-the-counter inserts that I recommend. You can typically get those on Amazon, and I think Brown Shoe Fit carries something similar to a PowerStep. PowerStep is the brand that I usually recommend. So that type of insert, if your foot's fatiguing in spite of good shoes, try a good insert. Come see your podiatrist too. I mean, I'm more than happy to check you out, X-rays, check you out, you know, get your history and find out what's going on and make those recommendations. We can, of course, customize the recommendation to the patient.
Absolutely. Dr. Willis, great information. Thank you so much for being on the program. As Dr. Willis mentioned, if you're looking to schedule an appointment, need to check something out with your feet, you can call Vandy's Family Health Clinic here in Webster City at 515-832-7800. You can also go online to our website and schedule your own appointment and find a day and time that works best for you. As I mentioned, Dr. Willis is available to see patients full-time here in our clinic and such a great asset to have on staff.
Well, thank you. So, pleasure to be here.
Thanks again.
You bet.
And that will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Diest Medical Center, where our focus is you.